Welcome back, cool cats. You are now finding yourself drifting off into a cloud, the conscious cloud, in fact. I am Joe Izzo, and I will be your guide today. Before we get started, I would like to recommend, if you do not already have a hot beverage within reach, pausing this podcast and getting yourself one if it's easily accessible. I have the pleasure of sitting down with Mr. Steve Odell. Steve Odell owns Rabbit's Moon Tea and also Enthea Tea House, a magical tea house in Southeast Portland. Steve serves us tea throughout today's episode, a wonderful pu'er, so having a beverage with you will really make you feel like you're in the room with us. So Steve and I get into the philosophy around tea, philosophy, if you will, some ideas of Zen, and really Steve just shares a bunch of amazing knowledge about tea. He is a great source, and I feel like I'm just a sponge when I'm around him. I get to learn so much. So grab yourself a beverage, sit down with us, and together we will create our own reality.
Yeah. Okay. This is a 2015 private production show pour.
Super tasty. Awesome. So today I have the pleasure of sitting down with Steve Odell. Steve Odell owns, I guess, was it Rabbit's Moon Tea?
Rabbit's Moon Tea Arts is the tea distribution label that I own. And Enthea Tea House is the brick and mortar tea house located in Southeast Portland.
Yeah. And so if you have not been to Enthea Tea House, I tell you, it is one of my favorite things that I've found in Portland. It's the vibe here is so cool. It's hard to put into words the amount of care and detail that's put into the services that they have here at Enthea. The room that we're sitting in right now, I wish I could do all of my podcasts in, honestly. It's so cool. I mean, I took some photos, but like, I don't know. There's so much cool stuff to look at in here, but it really just the that attention to detail and when you enter somebody's space, you realize wherever you are right now, in a car, in your room, somewhere, all of the things that surround you are things that you've chosen to a degree. I mean, you chose the car that you bought. You've chosen the space that you live, you've chosen the clothes that you're wearing. And so when you see somebody's space that is as cool as this, you realize the amount of time and effort and care that goes into placing everything where it is. So just keep that in mind, I guess. But yeah, this space is very unique and very cool. So if you live in the Portland area, or if you happen to ever travel here, I highly recommend coming to Enthea Tea House, which is sort of what made me want to do this podcast, to shine a light on Enthea, which I've found to be a new favorite place of mine. So anyways, thank you, Steve, for taking time out of your day to sit down and do this. And I'm really excited to share some tea with you in a conversation, and hopefully the message or the vibe that got you into starting Enthea shines through, and you know, like moth to a candle, folks will start coming here.
Thanks, Joe. I appreciate that. That's a very kind introduction. No attempt on my part to try to be cool. I just care about expression and design, and I think tea informs design and function. And I think that there's a lot that goes into tea, but it's also very simple. And hopefully in the course of this hour, we can unpack some of that together.
Yeah, I definitely, I get that. Like I read an article yesterday with Alan Watts talking about tea and how its incorporation into Zen, and this idea of like kind of tea culture being more like, I guess, like relaxed to a degree or something. Like they've made it kind of simple and like trying to figure out the complexity of the universe. They realize that it, like, you can't really explain it. So, you know, they just kind of it allow it to be like simple in a way.
Yeah, I don't know that quote that you're referencing from Alan Watts, but I can definitely relate. My specialty is in what the Chinese call Gong Fu Cha, which is a Chinese style of tea. And I wouldn't describe it as ceremonial. There is a ritual to it, but there is also a casual public aspect to it that is more about bringing people together and sharing a common moment than anything ceremonial, which I would distinguish as something that Japanese tea ceremony, cha no yu, is very distinguished in its style and approach. But that's not my specialty. My specialty is in Gong Fu tea.
Hmm. Yeah, I would have. I wonder, so is that, I guess, the main difference between those two styles, or?
It's one thing that could be considered. I try to emphasize the, a lot of people in the 16 years of practicing Gong Fu tea ask me how I get into this or how to get into this. And it's often been sort of a disarming question for me because I just picked it up. And I realized recently that being of a generation from, say, the 1980s and early 90s, I grew up with video games as opposed to board games. And whereas board games have a set of directions, video games, you just put the, you know, game in and turn it on and you just start playing and you figure it out. And that always, I realized recently that that informed my tea practice from the get-go. Is I never thought that there was anything I needed to particularly look at. I knew that I could just pick it up and figure it out along the way. And I think that that's the most beautiful and appealing thing to Gong Fu tea culture, is there is aspects and approaches to it, form and function, but you learn that along the way, and it can be both idiosyncratic while informing a greater quality of humanity that connects us all. And that sounds a little bit prosaic, but we can unpack that over time and understand more deeply what I'm talking about.
Definitely. So I guess we'll kind of go back here a little bit. And so how did you get into tea? I think you said 16 years now.
Yeah. I was going to UC Santa Cruz in California, and I met a good friend of mine at some random college party by the name of Sohan Fan. He's a good friend of mine who lives in Austin, has a tea house there as well. And we started drinking tea together. And the day that I drank tea was like autumn 2004, I think. I had had some tea that was aged that we know as pu'er. And I had never had anything like that. And this was a time when maybe 99% of the people that I knew had no idea what pu'er was or Gong Fu Cha. And there was something about it that, like, that completed a jigsaw puzzle piece in my being, whether it be the ritual or the focus on the cultivation of, like, the awareness that is required so that you're not oversteeping it or understeeping it. There is a golden mean space for every steeping that you could reach if you continue to be mindful. There's something about the purpose of it that gave me an opportunity to be more present with myself. And I had been involved in a meditation practice, a Zen meditation practice, since I was about 15. So I'd been doing that for 5 or 6 years before I came across tea. But they were such a natural fusion of my meditation practice, and later on down the road, learning that monks in China were some of the first people to get into tea or start a practice with tea, because it is a deepening of that mindful character of self and allows for a greater presence, as well as a somatic awareness that enhances the presence in the body.
Yeah, I very much resonate with that. I have recently started, I guess, more, I mean, I've had practice be on and off, but I definitely have tried to, more so recently, become, well, at least take my meditation practice more seriously and allow it to kind of like take shape. I've been doing like loving kindness meditation and then trying to do some like mantra meditation too. So, but I haven't known much about this, and so I'm still learning, honestly, and that's another reason why I wanted to do the podcast too, is because I'm very much a student, and so I feel with certain things, it can seem kind of unapproachable to people, where, you know, like we're going to unpack a lot of stuff here today, and hopefully that makes people want to come and participate in this really lovely community. But I think for some folks, it can be kind of daunting almost. Just there seems to be like a lot of maybe pieces or stuff to learn, or figuring out what exactly it is that you like. And so I think people can be kind of intimidated to, you know, or just are unaware to a degree too. So I hope that this gets people excited about tea, especially because it seems like we're going to be spending some time indoors. A lot of places are still kind of closed down. So this is something to do with yourself or with your roommates, and, or yeah, you know, and you can kind of, you know, deepen your meditation practice with it too. I read something in that article that I, yesterday, where they talk about monks. There's like a story of, a monk who was meditating and he fell asleep. So the next day he cut off his eyelids and threw them in the ground. And they said that's where the first tea plant sprouted from. And I guess the tea leaves are kind of eyelid shaped as well.
Yeah, that's Bodhidharma. He's one of the few patron saints of tea who came from India, actually, and brought Zen Buddhism to China and Japan. He's actually one of the few patron saints within Buddhism that crosses India, China, and Japan. But he's particularly favored in tea culture for that exact mythology that he was trying to prove the virtues of meditation. And the way that I've heard it told is that he kept falling asleep and it frustrated him. And so he decided to tear his eyelids off and threw them to the ground. And that's where tea sprouted, and since then has helped monks stay awake. At least that's the simple story. But, you know, other aspects of it is that it is a bridge, as it's can be said in China, a bridge between the heavenly spirit and the earthly heart. And in that way, as I was talking about earlier, with its somatic application, it's something that sublimates non-duality. And I think it can be really inspired experience in the West. I think there's a lot of indoctrination, passively or actively, around like the mind-body problem and Descartes and the Enlightenment. And the West is really obsessed with this illusion of being invested in separation. And I think tea really goes back to the heart of Chinese culture and this sense of tea as a tonic herb for amplifying and supporting the central aspect of the body, what they call the dantian, but it tonifies the center, and I think that it helps with balancing and harmonizing the greater system without getting bogged down in a lot of kind of Chinese medical terminology. It's a harmonizer, and it's the greatest harmonizer.
Yeah, and I remember I talked to you previously when we sat down. I came and bought my tea set, and we you had kind of touched on that, but yeah, this ability that it's pretty approachable. You know, most people have drank tea at some point in their lives, so it's, you know, allows it to be something that can be shared with everybody, where it's not like you're talking about some illicit substance, you know.
Right. Yeah. Everybody has a relationship with tea, whether they've drank whole leaf tea that's from farm direct tea producers that have had personal relationships with the distributor, or Lipton. It still has there's a cultural input that people can relate to, and it just depends on how deeply you want to engage with it. And what it comes down to, beyond all this lofty aspects, is it brings people together. And I think that is an imperative thing in our day and age. It brings people together. And in the way that it can be said, Zen and tea is one moment, one experience. And that in itself unifies the quality of the moment shared. And I think it's a great equalizer and I think it can be really beneficial in our time where people seem to choose division over unity and connection. And so I think that that's super beneficial on one level, bringing people together, which is what I've been focused on with tea and tea culture here in Portland. But secondarily, what you were touching on in this moment in time where people are being asked to spend a lot of time at home with a few people that they may know, this is a time where I've had the most people coming through and picking up tea sets and picking up a tea practice and finding opportunities to invest time in bringing tea to their moment and bringing the moment to others. And I think, if anything, it's a practice of just dropping our story and being present with ourselves. If I could say, you know, tea did anything, we don't need to talk about the biochemical nature or even the spiritual nature. It's just, it gives us an opportunity to drop the story and not be so stuck in our head and be present with the moment and with our bodies. And I think that that's a really important thing in this moment in time in the world.
Yeah, being able to drop the story and drop in with your friends and yourself, you know, to be able to be present with yourself, to be able to be present with others, to be able to listen. The conversations you'll have around tea boards are amazing. This isn't drinking alcohol with your friends and waiting for your turn to talk and yelling over people. This is inspired, I don't want to use not healthy, but like inspired, interactive, nourishing conversations that you can have. It allows you the ability to kind of check in with yourself. Actually, the first time I was actually in this very room that we were in, there was a woman that showed up, and we were all sitting around and drinking tea, and she looked kind of dismayed, and she sat down and started crying hysterically, like sobbing, and everybody in the room kind of, you know, went for their heart, and, you know, we all created the space for this woman to have this emotional experience. And she, I forget exactly what she said, but she said, she was saying things like, it's a lot and I don't know if I can handle it. And, you know,
I'd like to take a step back real quick and qualify that space for people that it was a community night that I do here called the Speakeasy. And that was definitely a unique, anomalous moment that doesn't always happen, but there's space for people to have their own experience. And every Friday for the last 4 years, for the most part, short of the pandemic, I've been having people come here from about 7 to 10 at night. And it's a all-you-can-drink tea experience. And we have different topics ranging from mythology and dreams or community or accountability or
synchronicity
or the Mandela effect, or just talking about personal practice. Pretty much anything goes. There's just different topics every week that support a loosely constructive conversation. And that was the format in which this experience happened.
Yes. Yeah. So thank you for explaining that. And this was my first experience in coming to this, to Enthea. And one, again, I told you the room's really cool. And two, being a part of a space that was like that, and seeing this community that was obviously its own literally underground cool community, but being able to have a space where somebody felt like that they had chosen to do this with their weekend or their Friday, and they wanted to come be in the space, and they felt comfortable enough to be able to have that sort of release, made me immediately fall in love with what was happening, which is, you know, these like people like that, the fact that the space had been created and curated for that type of experience. So,
well, I wasn't intending anything like that. There was just a safe space for that kind of experience. And also, I'd like to emphasize that for the most part, Enthea as a building is a above ground tea house that you can order tea like a cafe and connect with your friends. And it isn't always a communal full service experience. Mm-hmm. That's just exclusively defined by our Friday community nights. But in general, you know, we try to provide a space where people can feel like it's a home away from home, so to speak, because I think that that's a rare thing in this day and age. I think places outside of our personal space are defined more and more as these like corporate exclusive zones, which is absolutely misguided. The space outside of our home is and has always been in this country defined as public domain and the public good, and we pay taxes for that. Mm-hmm. And so short of MySpace being a business and not explicitly a public space, but I try to provide a space that feels intimate and welcoming for people. We have a fireplace and it's inside of a 120-year-old Victorian. We play vinyl music and try to invest in the analog and the direct experience as much as we can. You know, but it's also a space that people can come and study and use computers and things like that. We're not exclusive. We live in the modern world, and everything that happens in the modern world is also something to acknowledge.
Yeah, for sure. It's like a good being able to have a good balance between those two.
I think the biggest thing that I always caution is that avoiding exotification of tea or taking it out of the context of the modern moment and the modern experience and how it can bring people together and have a dialogue that's happening right now and not avoiding the reality. Because I think if we want to talk about tea and Zen is in no way avoiding what is the present moment, what is happening, the experience as it stands. You know, I think the concept of gong fu tea is the same as the same Chinese character as kung fu. And you can do kung fu while you're washing your dishes or while you're folding your laundry. It just depends on your commitment to that practice. And it's the same with Kung Fu tea. It's something that can be directly applied at the tea table, but that mindfulness is a commitment on a daily basis, and however deep you want to go with it is something that is ultimately endless. And I don't feel like I have any more authority over it than anyone else. I may have a different level of experience, but I'm definitely willing to explore the dimensions of it with people along the way.
Yeah, I love that idea. I think I'd heard David Nickturn talk about that with like folks. I think people think that Buddhism maybe looks like somebody meditating in a cave or a monastery, you know, who's living a renunciate lifestyle. And though that is a choice that some people can or may make in their life, that you can also be the person that has the family that is able to practice those sorts of things. You know, you're able to right. own a business and have a family and have children and be the father or whatever archetype you may be fitting into. But that, you know, same thing with like yoga too, that these, it extends into everything that you do, where every opportunity in life, every moment, being that it is always the present moment, is an opportunity to practice, you know?
Right.
And so, you know, it's, yeah, like you were saying, doing the dishes, taking the trash out, you know, doing ordinary things, you know, like we are these beautiful, unique creatures that, you know, are probably born of the universe. And it took Lord knows how many billions of years to get to the forms that we're in currently at this present moment. But it's also the things that are ordinary too, you know?
Yeah. Putting all that story aside too, you know, like, yeah, of course it's super awesome. We're all stardust and that jazz, but we're just alive and we have a breath, and whatever qualifies that beyond that one reality that we can barely grasp as it is, if we have anything, if we can claim ownership over anything, you know, being the breath. But beyond that, no matter what, it's all story, and it's all whatever level of story get us through as beings on this planet that live through meaning and make meaning and live through storytelling. And I think that we are in some way dependent on story personally and collectively to guide us and inform us about the world. But when we strip all that away, we still exist. And there's something inherently empty about that that is important to reconcile. And I think the physical application of tea in there is an empty pot that you fill with something that is brought to a level of life with hot water, and you're imbibing that life energy through the tea infusion, and it's giving you an even deeper experience of life through this living entity that is giving its life force up in order for us to have a deeper experience. That to me in itself is a miracle. If there could be anything that's a miracle, something, let alone an aged tea that's 5, 10, 20, 40, 70 years old, that's maintained a level of life force leaving the tree through that period of time to impart its information, its mineral content, and dare I say wisdom to our experience. That's something that's very profound. And I think those kinds of things are important to acknowledge in shared experience.
Yeah, I think it's things that people don't think about until you have a conversation about it, you know, that we, like a lot of thinking is done for us, just in the sense that it's like, you know, why do you go to Starbucks or drink coffee? Because, you know, a lot of the behavior we do is we watch other people do things. And so that's what becomes like a societal norm. You know, we're just like, oh yeah, you get a job and then you wake up at this time and you have your morning caffeinated beverage and then you go about, you know, it's kind of just like part of being in the status quo. And I don't think people think about how the beverage that you're drinking even got into your hand.
Right. Yeah. The automatic assumption. Yeah. I never presumed when I got into tea, to circle back to that part of the story, that I would go to China and begin working with tea producers and things like that. But it happened about going on 9 years ago. Again, my tea partner Sohan was living in China and told me to get out there, and I was in a bit of a stick in the mud part of my life, and eventually things worked out and I got to go out there. And I went out to Western China. In my first city that I went to was Chengdu, which is actually a very progressive city for China. There's a lot of expatriate communities there, a lot of different things going on, a lot of, it's a very modern and progressive city. It's quite big. I can't necessarily clock the per capita, but it has grown in the last 5 years exponentially. But it's this really beautiful city, and the outlying mountains, in particular, Emeishan and Mundingshan, are two very famous tea mountains. One's a Buddhist mountain, one's a Taoist mountain, but they produce fairly renowned green tea. And those are some of the first places that I got to experience tea made by hand from the source. And I had never... I know there are a lot of people in the world that get into something and they have to go to the source and make that connection. And I had never presumed that that was something that I would experience, but it happened and the ball kept rolling and we began making connections with people and creating different ties with tea producers and visiting them in the countryside. And, you know, 8 or 9 years later, I've been selling tea and teaware both nationally and internationally. And the heart of what I do is really getting people into what I call the tea lifestyle technology, because it is a technology of sorts. And I like to position it like that outside of a ceremony, because it's in the way of a technology is it's a tool to interface with that benefits our lifestyle and our health and wellness. And it's a tool for interfacing with ourselves. And one of my favorite things to do is setting people up with sets. And so what has become a mission of mine is working with artisans and potters and woodworkers in the Pacific Northwest within the bounds of Anthea Tea House to help curate and support and promote a Pacific Northwest tea culture that's informed by Gong Fu tea. And in some ways, you know, being that Anthea is a hybrid space living within a Victorian townhouse promoting Chinese tea culture with antique furniture, both from China and from the Victorian era, celebrating tea culture as something that is a Pacific Rim phenomenon that exists in Japan and Korea and America and China and beyond. And using this very rich, you know, cultural background in the Pacific Northwest that's just full of makers and artisans who have become more and more passionate about tea and tea culture. And in the last 2 years that the tea house has been the biggest extension of what I do, it has been really beautiful to continue to see how that has grown on the ground in the Pacific Northwest. There's about 10 to 15 different artisans that I work with up and down the coast now between Eugene, Portland, Olympia, and Seattle that all make teaware.
Yeah, and it's beautiful stuff too. I believe the pot I got was a Jason or Jonathan Steele.
Jonathan Steele.
Which,
shout out.
Yeah, shout out to Jonathan Steele. It was funny, my two friends, Gail and Chase, who actually were the ones that got me into tea, had recommended his Instagram to me, and then come to find out I'd end up purchasing one of the pots without actually knowing that it was made by him.
Mm.
Which is kind of a little fun thing. And I know you had mentioned that he's dug his own clay to make a new series of
He does that sometimes, and he's been going deeper into analyzing the clay qualities and figuring out aspects of local clays in the Pacific Northwest that are more beneficial. That's something that he's actively engaged in right now, but I can't necessarily say more about it.
Mm-hmm. But just a cool idea nonetheless that somebody's even thinking to do that. So it's really cool that, you know, because if he's making teapots, if you had to put tea in the teapots, then you need people to drink the tea that's in the teapots. So there's, you know, an element where everybody gets to participate in this thing. And as you do this, you allow somebody to be creative. Somebody gets to express themselves and make art and be creative. And then you get to interface, you know, like this person, like you were saying, is building a tea, you know, tea technology. And then you get to share that. You know, there's so many people get to benefit from that sort of thing, you know?
Yeah.
And you get to share it with, you know, a large group of people, you know, because you could sit down and have tea with, like, who knows how many people have probably drank tea out of some of the pots you guys have in here, you know? I'm sure that's probably facilitated a lot of really awesome and meaningful conversations for folks.
Yeah, I couldn't even imagine how many people I've drank tea with in the last 16 years between one-on-one sessions like this and community gatherings and big, large-scale events. I can't even begin to think about it. I'm just trailing off.
Yeah, I mean,
that's... about all the connections made. You know, I mean, but I think about that, you know, the present moment, which is something I keep harping on and coming back to, as one does. you know, it's worthy what you're touching on, because I consider every time I'm sitting at the tea table is an opportunity and a literal reality in which everyone that I sit with is coming back to a non-local state of now. Every time I sit down with somebody, we get to share in this moment right now, which is really all there is. Time in itself is an illusion, and it's a nice illusion, and we get to live in a three-dimensional space that moves through time, and that's how we exist and experience life. But the only, you know, value that we can have is this moment, and I like to think that getting an opportunity to share in the very moment, the visceral living quality of the now, is one of the biggest investments that tea is as a practice. And the more you can invest time, the more you can invest time moving through the present moment, the more you can cultivate your experience with tea. And I think that that's the most visceral, hands-on way to describe tea practice, is just being willing to sit down, put down the phone, put down the thoughts and the worries about the day, and just be with the tea and be with whoever you're with, whether that's yourself or others. I think, you know, that is the biggest, there's a word that I'm trying to think of. It's the biggest It's the biggest investment. Yeah. The biggest investment in yourself that you can do. And, you know, there's a lot more about cultivating tea, cultivating yourself with Kung Fu tea. It's a lifelong practice. And I think it's really important to clear the debris that people can get around thinking that it's something that you can just have next to all of these other imbibing substances, which I think is a good thing to bridge the subject of like our next concept that I wanted to talk about, which is the root of how I came up with the name Entheia.
Which I love. I love this.
When I started my tea business, Rabbit's Moon, the concept of the rabbit in the moon came to me through my studies of Chinese culture. And in many cultures around the world, from Ireland to Japan to China to India to the Mayans, it's one of the most strangely ubiquitous mythologies in the world is seeing a rabbit in the moon instead of a man. It's actually a very limited mythological perspective from my understanding. The man in the moon is really very focused to Mediterranean kind of romantic cultures. A lot of other cultures around the world have seen a rabbit in the moon. And the rabbit in the moon is doing very different things depending on people's cultural lens. But in China, the rabbit is pouring the elixir of life for the immortals. And so my intention in sourcing and working directly with people, tea people and tea producers in China, is that tea, which has been subconsciously considered the elixir of life in China for a long time, that it can be this bridge between heaven and earth and bring us into a deeper awareness in the moment and remind us of our immortal natures, remind us of that which is ineffable in the human spirit, and remind us of our greater propensity for compassion and understanding and sublimating a deeper state of the human experience. Because I think that on some level, we are living through an aspect of various levels of human amnesia about our greater potentials, which could be its own podcast in its own right. But short of that, that's what the ethos around Rabbit's Moon is. And the pearl of that coming out of it is Entheia, which is two Latin words put together that mean to find illumination within tea. It would be Entheia is entheos, which is also the same root word as the more modern scientific term for entheogens, which from my understanding means to find the divine within or find illumination within. And Theia, which was the original scientific term for tea, Theia sinensis, which in Latin means goddess from China. And it was only in the later time that it was changed to Camellia sinensis as a bifurcation of Theiaceae into the subvariety of Camellia. And I think Theia sinensis is a very potent use of language, both from Latin and associating it with this tea from China being a reflection of the goddess and the earth. And I think tea is considered a very potent beverage in China for that experience. I don't think anyone really actively... It's not a very self-conscious thing. People aren't going around saying this is reminding us of being alive on Earth. But I think tea is a very somatic thing. And I think that's just, it's just a visceral reality. And that's all that matters is it's a practical application of embodiment. Mm. And Anthea came to mind. One morning I woke up from a cold sweat and the word was just in my mind, and I knew of entheos as a Latin word and the root word of entheogen. And I've also known, you know, that tea is the most potent and subtle of all entheogens, because none of the other renowned and infamous ones like ayahuasca or peyote or ibogaine, to be extreme, none of those are in every cupboard in the world, nearly. But tea is. And even, you know, one's grandmother enjoys a cup of tea, but isn't actively engaging in peyote every morning.
I mean, if you did, you'd have a very cool grandmother, I'm sure.
Sure, and there are cultures, you know, particularly in the Southwest, that is a reality, and mm-hmm. and that's very real. But on an endemic global scale, tea is the second most drank beverage next to water, and there's been wars fought over tea, and the tea plant in particular, to be specific, tea being white tea, green tea, oolong tea, black tea, and aged tea, called pu'er, but also the umbrella term for aged tea in every province is hei cha, which is in itself an entirely different dialogue. But Anthea was something that I was inspired by my own inner illumination, because I found that I wasn't quite vibing with the Western application of a lot of people would often say that they were very tea drunk, or they wanted to get tea drunk, or I feel tea drunk. And I didn't really relate to that or align to that. I've never felt tea drunk in my entire life. And I don't think that tea on a personal level, in my opinion, is something that gets you drunk. And I ended up asking one of my tea producer friends, he was talking to me about tea drunk cha tzwe is something that, in his experience, is something that you feel when you have too much tea, that you feel uncomfortable in your body. He said it wasn't a positive thing. And I said, is there a term for the positive experience of feeling embodied and in the moment with yourself or with others that feels harmonious and engaging and illuminating? And he said, not particularly. And I thought of I'm not fluent in Chinese, but I'm doing my best. I perhaps have a first grader's comprehension, so I can get by and order food and have very, very basic conversation. But I'm always seeking to learn more. But I asked him if this one term was appropriate, and I said what came to mind was cha ming. Cha ming is ming is light. It's used in the word to understand, ming bai. Wu ming bai is I understand, but literally translates to I am in the light. And so cha ming would be tea bright. Mm-hmm. And in some ways, maybe translated to tea illumination, tea illuminated. Anyway, I asked him if cha ming was a potentially appropriate use of the concept, and he said, yeah, that was applicable. And so I had thought about cha ming for a while as a concept, tea bright, to feel tea bright, And I really like that because that's how I feel when I feel deeply engaged in tea and conversation and maybe feel a little bit uplifted, which is more of a clarifying aspect. I feel more myself and I feel more jovial and happy and engaged than otherwise. And that bled over in my dream state at some point to become Entheia, which is an attempt to bring, you know, my own background into it, coming from the West and wanting to honor my experience in practicing tea, but also have a tea house that was inherently born from these Latin root words that are an opportunity to be this statement that's a fusion of hybrid culture, both East and West, in the name, in the building, in the expression, and the offering. So yeah, Entheia is to find illumination within tea.
That's so awesome. And this is why I love this place, and this is why I enjoy coming here, because that's the story, you know, or, you know, that's how it came to be. And it, there's just so much, in there, you know, there's a lot to unpack in just a, you know, a word or a phrase or a joining of two words. And that element, and the vibe that carries comes through, you know, like very, very fluidly. And so, I mean, I remember when you had first talked to me about it, you didn't give me the full story, but I'm happy that I'm happy that I heard that and folks got to hear that too, because it's really cool. And it's by far the, most like in depth in, like, it just embodies a lot, you know, in the phrase. So I think that's really, really cool. And yeah, I don't know. It's what part of the reason that made me want to do this podcast too is to get that out there and show folks that, you know, in whatever you're doing, you can create whatever you want to, you know. You can join things together and you can find whatever it is that you care about, whatever it is that you love, whatever it is that you do or want to do or want to create. You know, this is a shared playground. We all get to play on this playground together. You know, we were all children at one point in time. We were all somebody's children. And so whatever it is that you want to create, you have the opportunity to do that. And maybe that's the reason why you're here. One of them, you know, to be able to express yourself, whatever your truth may be, whatever aligns in your mind and your heart that makes you happy and is something that you enjoy sharing with people, because you know, this is something that you share, is your idea. And yeah, it just keep filling people's cup with it, you know. Something that allow, you know, it's regenerative to do, you know, too. And it's cool to think that, you know, this all stemmed from an experience you had when somebody shared tea with you.
Yeah. And every single time that I share tea with somebody and I get to impart that spark that I see in their eyes, where they go, "What is this? This is tea? This is just tea?" You know? And then, like, a few hours later,
yeah,
they're like, "Whoa, this is just tea." And I think that's, you know, what is so beautiful about it is that tea can be as infinitely profound as it is infinitely mundane, because it's just leaves in water. And I think that the essence of it as an experience is that it has to be that. It can't be so dressed up, because it's just something that is shared. And in that way, you know, I like to sort of be playful about this concept, because when you talk about beginner's mind, or particularly even tea imbibing a quality of beginner's mind on some level, to talk about beginner's mind in itself is a conceit. So I say, I don't know what beginner's mind is. What's beginner's mind? And then just move on from there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But yeah, it brings there's an opportunity for experiencing original innocence. And I don't want to go too much further in waxing poetics about that. I like to keep it as simple as possible, in the sense of just being able to share a moment with somebody else and dropping the story. I think we carry in our day and age, and in general as human beings, but in our day and age, I think it's both a security mechanism and a survival mechanism to carry stories. And I think there's something beautiful, something ineffable, something mysterious about tea, in that it gets us to drop that story. And I don't really like to wax too much poetics beyond that in general, because I think it speaks for itself. And that's really what it comes down to, is tea, and good tea speaks for itself. And there's a very simple and short poem by the Japanese tea master Rikyu that I'm not going to say it word for word, but it essentially goes, "First you boil the water, and then you steep the leaves, and then you enjoy it properly." And the only emphasis in that entire poem is where properly is put. You enjoy it properly. And that's really how you engage with the moment. And tea is there as a tool, as a bridge for you to have a deeper experience with yourself in this moment of being alive. And the deeper you can invest in being present and letting everything fall to the wayside and getting to the marrow, the real marrow of what is, I think that is the essence of cultivating mindfulness with tea. And it's always there for you. And, you know, it can be a social beverage, but I think the heart of it at all times for me is that it's a tool for interfacing with how to be more mindful of the present moment. And it is an opportunity to remind us. But it's just a tool, because like all things, it's not an answer if it exists outside of ourselves. It's just another reminder, and it's a beautiful reminder, and it's a very compassionate reminder. And that's something that always brings me back to it, is of all things that we can imbibe on this planet, it's one of the few things that I think reflects the human spirit and the human potential the deepest. And that's something that always fascinates me as a point of meditation. What is it about tea that inspires such a deep aspect of the human spirit and being compassionate for ourselves and others and in this moment that we all have and share? I don't have an answer to that, but it's definitely a question that I continue to come back to.
Your own personal tea quote, a koan.
Exactly.
Awesome. Man, this has been fun. So how can folks get involved with Entheia?
Yeah, thanks for asking. Currently, our website is under construction, which is rabbitsmoontea.com. I don't recommend anyone going to it right now. It's not really together. But Entia Tea House exists on the two major social media platforms, on Instagram and Facebook. I think most people use Instagram as casually. And so, yeah, you can reach me there. Right now I am invested in doing a lot of like personal curation of things, so people can reach out to me and tell me what they're interested in and what they like, and we have more of a hands-on engagement, which is what I'm doing as a surrogate while the website is being refinalized. And we get our eShop up, which is, you know, a bit of a handicap for me, but because tea is such a hands-on experience, I like the opportunity to talk to people, whether I know them, whether they've been recommended to me, or whether I am sharing with a stranger. You know, it's nice to be able to curate something directly. So you can reach out to me at Entia Tea House on Instagram or the Facebook business page. Those I check regularly. We're currently doing a fundraiser. This year hasn't been extremely deleterious to us because most of my investment in business is in Rabbit's Moon Tea as a tea distribution umbrella, and that's been established for about 8 years. And the tea house itself as a brick and mortar are something that is a greater offering to the community and a hub for tea culture in the Pacific Northwest. And, you know, something that I continue to want to build as a tea culture education center. And that continues to grow. But where most of my support comes from has been online, both locally and abroad. So I ship nationally and internationally. And I'm currently doing a fundraiser to help make sure that we can come into the first quarter of the calendar year, this coming year, being as financially solvent as possible. We have been fairly quiet this year about any asking for needs or support because we've been having just enough to get by and wanting other voices, whether that be people of color or people who are in deeper needs, to have a greater voice this year. And a lot of people have been much more disadvantaged than I have with being dependent on a job that they no longer have. I've been grateful that even though I have been handicapped, you know, having a food service business that can be open in only very limited ways and almost, you know, some ways not at all for a part of the year, you know, that's been a severe handicap. But I've just always invested and doubled down in tea and teaware sales and distribution. So that's been helpful. And I've been grateful to have that be a minimum needs-based thing that's got me by. But it hasn't been everything that has made it work. You know, I've been grateful to have the support that I have, but we're still, you know, behind in various ways. And so we are doing a fundraiser. It's a bit hands-on analog right now. So you can go to Entia Tea House on Instagram. And one of our recent posts talks about the fundraiser and how you can engage with that. We have a $20, $50, $100, $250, and $500 tiered offering for how you'd like to support the space. If you like local tea culture to continue to thrive here in Portland and the Pacific Northwest, we would be super stoked to receive that. It's all based on digital payments. So the information you can find directly at our Instagram at Entia Tea House, Entia Tea House.
Perfect. And I'll also provide more links to this too in the podcast description and also when I do the outro as well. And so did you say you were also starting an online classes possibly?
Yeah, that's something that people who are interested can reach out to me directly on Instagram or Facebook and let me know that they're interested. I'm in the process of tailoring a online class through various platforms. It might just be a Zoom class that happens bi-monthly, where we have an intro to Gong Fu Ti and what the process looks like, and really just having it be a simple hands-on experience that people can get into learning and applying it to their life as soon as possible. I'm also working on a tiered Patreon support that would be actually a tea of the month, where you'd get a certain tea, and we would, depending on whatever tier you are interested in monthly, have a monthly conversation about that tea.
Oh, that's
cool.
Have
it be an engaging way to promote tea culture and talk about handmade tea and the ethos around that on a monthly basis. So there's a lot of things brewing, cool, so to speak, and it's just going to take some time while we invest in that up into the new year.
Which, you know, I'm excited for 2021.
Yeah.
Let's see what happens. But yeah, if, you know, I mean, it's getting cold, folks. Tea is really great. We're getting kind of close to Christmas, but, you know, the Chinese New Year's next year. So maybe you want to get somebody a gift for that or something. Or maybe you want to invest in yourself and your own practice. So I highly recommend supporting this tea house. I know that's, you know, I'm going to continue to support them in any way that I can. And yeah, so I've got one more question for you.
Sure.
It's a question I ask everybody that comes on the podcast. What would you like to upload to the Conscious Cloud? The Conscious Cloud being kind of a metaphor for the collective consciousness.
That's a nice question. I might have some dead air for a moment while I think about that.
No pressure.
Yeah, I remember you were speaking about that, and mm-hmm. That's the essence of what you do here. I think what I offer and what I try to offer with tea is a respite from the physicality of the world. We can wax poetics or not about everything we've talked about with tea. But I think to be really vulnerable and real, in some ways, tea has saved my life in giving me purpose and focus and direction, something to love and value that I can engage with directly, that I can have an immediate experience out of it. That's not only been very satisfying, but it's put me in my body. I think having tea come to me in my early 20s, right, a few years out, being on my own and experiencing the world and going to college, it gave me something greater to focus on and connected me with this lineage of tea culture that has gone back, you know, in China for over 2,000 years. And tea is this thing that has lived through wars and the falls of dynasties and cultures and has maintained itself as the heart of Chinese culture since the beginning. And that's something that is incredibly inspiring, that level of resilience. And yet, even though within that context in time, and also tea itself can grow in crags, in rocks, on the edges of cliffs, and some of that kind of tea in the Wuyi Mountains in southeastern China is some of the most sought after. It grows in intense adversity, and yet it gives so generously and so compassionately, and it is just something that inspires me to no end. And so what I would offer to the conscious cloud is that life doesn't have to be so hard. And it doesn't have to be just tea that offers that. It is a blessing. It is a miracle that we have a plant on this planet that softens the blow of the physicality and the raw, visceral nature of being alive in having a body, especially in this moment in time, in this extremely dynamic post-capitalist, post-postmodern society where there is this intense level of exchange and change on a global level happening before our eyes. It's unprecedented in human scale, and I think it can be very inhumanizing, especially in this digital age where so much, especially in this exact moment, is being put online, is compelling us and forcing us and insisting us to converge online digitally more and more. T says, here we are. And this is all we have. And it doesn't matter. And it's all good, and it's going to work out. And it also teaches us that the moment is fleeting. As my niece said when I had tea with her once, there is tea, and then there is no tea. It's like magic. So it gives us a direct experience of the ephemeral. And I think that that's extremely important in this culture of instant gratification, that temporality is something that is taught to us on a daily level and reminds us that everything is fleeting, even thoughts and feelings. They are not what define us.
Wow. Amazing. Thank you. Thank you. I mean, that's, yeah. Beautifully said.
Yeah, I'm glad it got out.
Yeah.
I'm glad it got put out on, I don't know what I just said, but it came out.
Well, so. Fortunately I recorded it, so.
Great.
Amazing. Steve Odell, Enthea Tea House, thank you for sitting down and doing this podcast with me. Thank you for the tea. He's been serving tea this whole time. I don't know if there's probably some really great sound effects in the background of this podcast. His cat's also wandering around too.
Hopefully. Yeah. I know we have these unidirectional mics, but shout out to my, deaf cat Albus.
Yeah.
He's a sweetheart and a big ally for the tea house.
Yeah. Amazing. Again, thank you. And, this has been a very wonderful conversation. So I hope you folks who are listening enjoyed it. And, I'm sure we'll catch up again soon. So.
Thanks, Joe. Yeah, thanks for giving me the opportunity to share with people what Enthea is and what Rabbit's Moon Tea is. And feel free to reach out online and engage with me directly. I'm very approachable and I love engaging with people. And till next time, Joe.
Yeah, until next time. What a wonderful conversation. So many amazing nuggets of truth in that conversation. It was very enlightening for me, and I hope it was enlightening for you folks as well. Also to remember that enlightenment is a state of being. It is not a destination. It is choosing to see the light in all places and all situations, right here and right now, exactly where you are. So there's a lot of amazing presentness and being that came out of that conversation for me, and some stuff that I can take and apply and practice in my everyday life. So thank you, Steve, for bestowing the wonderful knowledge upon me and anybody else who's listening to this. So if you want to connect with Steve, rabbitsmoontea.com is the website. Again, rabbitsmoontea.com. On Instagram, Enthea
underscore teahouse, ENTHEA underscore teahouse. They have a fundraiser going on. If you want to support them, if you want to buy some tea, if you want to connect with Steve, if you are in the Oregon area or you're visiting, check out the tea house. You won't be disappointed. And yeah, so also, I am at the Conscious Cloud, well, at Conscious Cloud on Instagram, if you want to give me a follow. Also, if you are listening on Apple Podcasts, if you could give the podcast a good rating and subscribe if you're enjoying it, it gives us some visibility and would be very much appreciated. I also happen to have a Facebook page as well if you want to connect. And yeah, until next time, guys, be the frequency you want to see. Be the frequency you want to see. I love you guys. I just wanted to add one more thing. We had somebody who is near and dear to the psychedelic movement pass away a couple days ago, Miss Cherie Eckert. This episode is dedicated to you. She was one of the lead and chief petitioners of the Yes on 109 campaign, which is also known as the Psilocybin Services Initiative here in Oregon. Fortunately, it passed, and so we get to see the fruits of her hard work and what was her and Tom's dream. Both of them also started the Oregon Psilocybin Society together. So I just wanted to put that in here. Thank you, Cherie, for your hard work and the love and care that you put into this. You won't be forgotten, and your energy continues and will continue to live on in the hearts of everyone who chooses to remember you. So bless you, bless your family, and bless the families of everyone who's listening to this. Hold your loved ones close, because you never know when it's going to be time. So enjoy life, be present, and be loving. Bye, guys.